Sustaining Alive with Rita Steele, thanks to Kraft Homes, Homestar approved practitioners.
Oh, good on you, Kraft Homes. You can check them out online if you like. It's pretty easy, just a quick Google away, and you can find yourself a great building company who can help you out with building a sustainable home.
Or at least dreaming. I've looked at that site and gone, wow.
You're like, I wouldn't mind upgrading my house a little bit.
Nothing like thinking you need something you probably don't need. I didn't need to upgrade my house, but after looking at that site, I really wanted to.
Slightly, but I hate
I tell you what, it would be much more sustainable than my house. I've got one of those old, built in the 40s and then added on to over the years. Mm. And no insulation and classic Auckland. Anyway.
That's by the by, Rita. We're here to talk plastic this afternoon.
Yes, we are. So the last couple of weeks we have at some point mentioned alternatives to plastic and what we can do with plastic, recycled plastic. And we have talked about, there was some cool kind of fence posts, which seemed like a really good idea. And I've seen a couple of bottling companies coming out and saying that they're using recycled plastic now, which is, you know, great. And then also the recycling scheme, deposit scheme. We talked about that a couple of weeks ago. And I sort of talked about how I was a bit concerned that that wasn't really fixing the problem, which is that we really need to sort of move away from our obsession with plastic. And it's one of my goals for the next year is that I really, really want to move to maybe not 100% plastic free, because I think that's quite hard, but at least sort of 90% or 99%. because today what I want to talk about is if we continue using plastics, the problem with plastic is the way it breaks down.
This is the whole thing. People say, hey, let's make roads out of it, let's make fence posts out of it, but little bits of it break off and then just go into the environment. When the woman from Sustainable Coastlines came in, your friend, she was like, you know those stretchy jeans that you're wearing right there? Those are full of plastic, and every time you wash those jeans, little bits of plastic go down the drain and into the sea where organisms eat them, and it goes into the food chain.
Absolutely. So that's kind of what we're going to talk about a little bit more today, is just how dire that problem actually is. So just a really bit of quick history. Our Mesoamerican mates in the 1600s actually started using bioplastics. So originally it was derived from things like egg and blood protein. So they were able to kind of make it from naturally occurring things. And then in the early 1900s, it was fully synthesized, and that's when things started going a bit pear-shaped. Because I guess fully synthesized in the way that it is means that it doesn't actually exist naturally. So it doesn't necessarily break down naturally either. And it wasn't until 1954 that polypropylene, so that's, I believe, the stuff that we have in our clothes, and the expansion of the plastics that we'd kind of created before that started happening. So in mid-1950s is when everything went a bit crazy. And since then, it's estimated that we have between 1 and 6 billion tonnes have been created and have entered the waste cycle. So do you know what worries me about that is that between 1 and 6 billion, that's no information about this stuff. And I always think that about science. I absolutely love science. I'm a huge believer of it. But we can't forget that sometimes we create things, and just because we've created them doesn't mean we should do them. And perhaps when they've created plastics, they should have had a global consensus on how they were being released, what products they were being used for, a register of how much was being released, that kind of thing. Because I think there is probably a place for plastics on, you know, certain medical things perhaps, or, you know, stuff that we really can't find replacements for. But in terms of just everyone using it all the time for everything,
I guess the scale, people, you probably could have estimated the scale and the widespread use of it just sort of has run rampant out of control, and now everyone's got used to it and sees it as almost a necessity in their life. So
absolutely.
Hindsight is a great thing it in this is, instance, but we've kind of...
The horse has bolted. Mm. So what the issue is that plastic degrades very, very slowly. As it breaks down, it releases toxic chemicals, in particular bisphenol A, which is BPA. Most people would have heard of that. So that's a known carcinogen and something that you want to keep out of your food. And the other day I noticed that Glad Wrap says BPA free, and I thought, oh, that's nice of them, because you really don't want to put BPA on your food. Mm. If you are using plastics, please keep an eye out for that BPA sign, because we really don't want that in our environment. But as it breaks down, it releases these toxic chemicals, but it also slowly releases these tiny particles. And we talk about microplastic a lot, and they are ones that you can see. They're very, very small, but you can see. But post that, they actually break down into nanoparticles.
And what do they do? Why do
They can get into everything. So there's concerns that they can actually cross our gut membrane, but they've been known to blow in the wind. So they have actually found nanoparticles in air pollution. They've done significant research studies on Paris and I think it's called Donggu in China, and found a steady fall of nanoparticles in the air. So that's like constant air plastic pollution, which is a little bit of a worry. So we breathe that in. Mm. And at the nano level, they're concerned that it could actually cross our membranes, certain membranes in our bodies. Mm. And then sadly, it's not just those big cities. They've actually found those air particles in the Pyrenees, which is a really remote region, the nearest city being 120 kilometres away. So it's blowing in strong winds, so that's how small these particles are. It's also, we've known about microplastics and nanoparticles in fresh water since the 70s, so they've been around for a long time. Mm. We've found them in soil, so that's also how, you know, when you do your washing and whatnot, you know, I'm on a septic tank, so how septic field goes out into the soil, that will be there pretty much forever. Now it's in our food chain, so we know that fish are eating it, and then they're getting it in their flesh, and then we're then on
then we're
on
eating the fish. I mean, can we really do anything about this other than saying no to plastic? How do we keep it out of the environment?
Yeah, really interestingly, what I try and do when I look at these things is find out what the scientists who are studying it, what are they doing? And one of the things the scientist, one of the researchers said that he does is he hasn't cut out fish in his diet, but he no longer cuts or uses any plastic in his food. So he doesn't cut on a plastic board or use plastic plates or anything like that. And I thought that was quite interesting. There's increasing amounts of study to say that once you heat up plastic, and this is pretty early science but around this, but once you heat up plastic, forever more is it kind of leaching little bits of plastic. Mm. So, I mean, it seems like a great thing to store food in, but perhaps don't heat your food. And like I say, there's not a ton of science on that yet. It's pretty early days, but it is something that, you know, increasingly they're sort of going, this is questionable what we're using these things for. Of course, you know, the best thing we can do is not use it, but I would love to see and everyone hates tax, but I'd love to see a tax on the manufacturers, because even if they said we're going to bring in a tax in 2025, and that would give these guys, you know, 5 or 6 years to find alternatives that will be cheaper than whatever that tax is. And there's so many alternatives popping up. I saw the girl, a 16-year-old, that's created an edible plastic for food wrap, which is awesome. So there's so many alternatives now that are popping up, but these guys need funding, they need people to back them, they need, which will come about by the destruction of the plastic industry.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah, so that's microplastics and the new one, nanoplastics, which, you know, sound good but aren't.
Mm-hmm. Do we have more on the proposed recycling scheme? Have you looked at that at all?
Yeah. So the piece we did, I think, was 2 or 3 weeks ago. And that what they've done is they've set up a like a working group to work through some of that detail. And there's like the stuff that kind of came out of it initially was that they're going to have to have quite a high fee on that recycling, you know, maybe more like 40 cents rather than 5 cents to make it worth people's while. But that working group could come up with all sorts of things. So I don't know what they're restricted to, but, you know, they may turn around and say this, like, actually, we need to get rid of plastic. That's what would be the nice thing. We need to get rid of plastic. So actually, why don't we phase in a tax or have a tax that will encourage producers to find an alternative for their products?
Should we take a phone call?
Sure.
Hello, BFM.
Yes, very interesting about recycling. I just want to say that when I was in Sweden, all plastic bottles, Coke, Fanta, lemonade, etc., they had big machines at the fronts of supermarkets where you placed the bottle into the machine. You didn't get money, but you got a receipt which took money off of your bill when you paid for your shopping. So that supermarket, if they dealt with that major brand of plastic drink or whatever, you could take that back to the supermarket it came from and get a, which was called a bon, a B-O-N. I don't know what that translates into, but it paid for your shopping at the end.
It's kind of a nice way to do it, and I guess it's...
But they used to do that years ago in Auckland when you took your beer bottles back to the liquor shops. The bigger lime red crates, they used to be crates in, back in the 80s, you could take them back to the liquor stores and they would give you a deposit on the... a credit, sorry, on the bottles.
Yeah. So I mean, you know, looking at a scheme like that is sort of what the government's doing at the moment.
Oh, really? Yes, because I spoke to Tony Amos about that on Radio Live on one occasion. The other thing is, because we're at that time of the year where there is sort of warm and cold temperatures here in Auckland anyway, we might experience high wind gales because of the hot and the cold mixing. And I can go back to this time last year in Western Auckland where they had major tornadoes which uprooted trees, damaged cars, took tiles off of roofs. It ran into the millions of dollars.
All right, Cora. Yeah. Hey,
thank you very much.
Thank you for that feedback. Bye.
Yeah, so just on that, I mean, that's kind of my point is that, you know, if we're doing these schemes where you get money back or you get a credit for your shopping or whatever, that's fine and dandy, but it kind of still encourages us to use plastic. And all we're doing at the moment with that plastic is recycling it. And what is, actually, what we're doing with it is trying to send it to countries like China and India and Malaysia, and they're no longer accepting it. So we're not really recycling a lot of plastic in New Zealand at all.
Can we burn it? Have we got to the stage yet where we can burn it for fuel? Can we burn plastic cleanly enough?
I did sort of start reading about it. It's very expensive, and not. I didn't research it enough to be able to answer that fully, but I can next week if you want. But it doesn't seem to be. It's still the problem with it is that it's still cheaper to just make new
stuff
plastic. And that's the problem. The producers go, they don't take the responsibility for getting rid of that plastic. I mean, it's super expensive to burn it cleanly. Then they're just going to say, oh, we'll put it in a landfill. Well, they're hands off. They don't really care what happens to it. But, you know, we're going to put it in landfills, or we're going to try and send it to third world countries or do really bad things with it, when what we need to be doing is just restricting how much of this stuff is being made to begin with.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That's it.
Down with plastic, everyone.
Yeah, just try. I mean, you know, we've talked about it before, and we can do another piece on it. You know, like I say, I'm on a big mission to de-plastic my life. Since I had my first child, I found plastic kind of came in because it is very convenient. But you know, we can do a piece on how to cut back, and that's something that I'm going to be on a big mission for the next sort of year. And you don't have to do it all at once. It's just a little bit here and there. But I mean, at the same time, one person or a few people's efforts is nothing compared to, you know, if we can try and get it done at a corporate level, we're just not producing it for unnecessary things, or we're finding alternatives. So that, you know, that's the thing is, right now these companies, they're doing some really cool stuff, but they need investment, and they can only get that if it's a fair game. And at the moment, it's almost free to create plastic. Whereas, you know, if you're looking at an alternative, it's more expensive. So a lot of companies won't necessarily go and fork out for that alternative. Yeah.
All right. Hey, Rita, thank you very much for trekking in here to BFM.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
We'll see you next week.
Stay away from nanoplastic.
That was Sustaining Alive on 95 BFM. Thanks to Kraft Homes, Homestar approved practitioners. Go to krafthomes.co.nz.